Hello and welcome to episode 190 of Speak Beastie for November 12th, 2023.
Hosts, Carolyn.
I'm Jeff.
And I'm Liz.
And this week we are supported by your Speak BC Patreon and its supporter, Margie. Yay!
Yay, Margie! We don't need to have any small talk or anything. We're just going to go right into thanking Margie because Margie's awesome and we love our Patreon supporters. That's
exactly
the vibe of. Today, nothing else is happening in the world. There are no elections.
Nope.
Everything's fine.
Everything
I mean,
is awesome.
There's like 6 weeks left until my son is born. I guess that's
what?
Kind of
Yay!
Important.
That's right. That's getting
close. It's right around the corner.
See, there you go. We're having
it
a
is.
Small talk
and
after
if people...
we think
And I'm going to go nuts if people don't stop telling me that it's going to be hard having a child with a birthday so close to Christmas.
Oh, I have thoughts. We'll talk later.
Yeah, that's the Phoenix Register for today. Stop telling Jeff that their son having a birthday so close to Christmas is going to be an issue. Yeah.
When is the actual due date, if you don't mind sharing?
December 21st.
Oh, wow. Oh. So like real close.
Real close.
Yeah, so we're looking at the possibility of either having a baby on Christmas, which is a heck of a thing for a pastor's son to do.
Yeah.
Or bringing our son home on Christmas Day.
Oof.
And this year, that is my excuse for decorating the house in November, because by the time we hit December, I don't think, if I haven't done it by then, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, you're going
to... I refuse to decorate before Thanksgiving, so I always wait till that Friday, and that's my Black Friday. Not shopping, decorating my house.
That is a very fine way to celebrate. I wasn't sure exactly when I wanted to do it, but then my brother and my sister-in-law sent me a picture of my one-year-old nephew just looking Aww. As happy as can be in front of the Christmas tree that they just put up, and I said, all right, that's it.
Aww,
Christmas tree's going up.
Cute.
Grinch is going on the TV. It is officially, when we get in the car, we're going to be listening to all the Pentatonix Christmas albums.
Yes.
It's official. Halloween has been a wonderful thing this year, thanks to my newfound love of haunted houses. But
yes.
Now that is past, and we are going into Christmas mode.
Hey, I think it's fun because, like, I'm a person that puts Halloween decor out like September 1st. Even this year, I put it out in August. So I'm all for people doing like the whole November, December of Christmas. I think that's fun.
I can't do it.
Well, it's not like there are turkey trees. So, you know, Thanksgiving is
yeah.
a wonderful holiday to celebrate. But even so, like, I wait all year for the opportunity to put out my Christmas stuff because it's my favorite.
See, I wait all year to put out my skeletons because I do skeletons for September, October, and then pumpkins for November, and I have a whole collection of anatomically incorrect animal skeletons where I'm like, that's not what that skeleton actually looks like. So I have a lot of fun ones like a duck. I have a unicorn, which is probably still wrong based off my knowledge of horse anatomy. I have a scorpion, which is wrong for many reasons. I'm trying to get a frog and a moth because I keep seeing those, but I keep missing them in stores. Oh. So if anyone has the hookup, let me know.
I used to have a skeleton, but it was just so I could use the carpool lane.
Love it.
Oh, that's great.
Well, I guess in like actual Phoenix Register, that isn't just us tangenting about holidays.
Yeah.
Yes, we do have an item in the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors. Hey you, yes you, the magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint, just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind the scenes features. But wait, there's more. Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wigs Knees and How.
So, here's the deal with today's Phoenix Register. I might be remembering this wrong, but I hope someone else will back me up on this. I feel like on social media, the author of this series released some kind of tantalizing hint about how many films there were supposed to be, and people figured out which countries Newt and company would be traveling to based on this hint. And that was before the first movie came out, right after the first movie came out. I'm not 100% sure exactly when it was posted. Exactly. It was a tweet, because with the author, it's always a tweet. But yes, yeah. It was a tweet that it was so long ago that I feel like I have been very, very comfortable in the knowledge that there was supposed to be five films for some time. Mm-hmm. But so, apparently, not everybody.
But here's what I remember. She made the announcement about the five movies, because it was like a comic. I don't know if it was a Comic-Con thing, but it was like there was a panel and they were all there. Right? And she was talking about the script because she was writing the script and said that she envisioned it as five movies, right? Because that's what this article is talking about, right?
Yes. Yeah.
There was a tweet. Right. It was like a fan event. And then after that, there was a tweet where wasn't it like hello in five different languages? And that's how people figured out. If it wasn't hello, it was the same word in five different languages. And that's how they figured out where it was supposed to be going.
I'm going to Google that see if I can find right. that tweet.
But anyway, Googled.
So it was the fan event, that tweet, and then the movie came out.
Okay.
I remember it, but I could be wrong.
Until we have evidence that isn't what happened, that's what we're going to go with. The reason I bring it up is because apparently the Davids keep getting asked about the fact that there was supposed to be five movies. They keep getting asked about the future of the Fantastic Beasts franchise, and David Yates is still on a press tour for his new film, and he was asked about it yet again.
I have found the tweet.
Oh!
I'm loading it right now. Who knows how long it will take Twitter/X to load. Let's see. I am loading.
Great. While you're loading that, I'm going to read this quote from David Yates.
Perfect.
From his recent interview. He said, "The idea that there were going to be five films was a total surprise to most of us because Joe just mentioned it spontaneously at a press screening once. I was there with Eddie and the other actors, and we were talking about the movie that we were making, and we were very excited about, that first Fantastic Beasts film." So there you go. And Joe said, "Oh, and by the way, there's five of them." And we all looked at each other because no one had told us there was going to be five. We committed to this one, so that was the first we'd heard of it. Okay, see, that to me feels different from what was, you know, being reported before, because I feel like what was being reported in recent history was that he just found that out not that long ago from where we are right now talking about it. But this story makes it seem like he found out before the first film was released, but what he didn't realize was at the moment he signed on to direct the first movie, he didn't know there was supposed to be five.
Right, and that's the way I remember it. The way I remember it is Warner Brothers had slated it as a trilogy. Mm-hmm. The way I remember the storyline going is, or the all of this news going is, they went to Joe and said, because they had optioned all of it anyway, we want to take Fantastic Beasts and turn it into a movie, into a trilogy. And then she went back to them and said, well, I have a storyline in mind for him. Can I write the script? They let her write the script. And at that fan event, she drops the bomb of, because somebody was asking her about a trilogy, because that's what everybody knew at that time. And she said, well, I always envisioned it as five. Not too long after that, I remember Jacob. Who's the actor? I'm drawing a blank.
Dan.
Why am I? Dan Fogler. I love him so much. I don't know why I blanked on his name. Dan, I remember seeing something about Dan saying, well, we're only contracted for three. And her making a comment, maybe I'm misremembering all of this, by the way. Huge caveat, don't at me. This is how I remember it from, what, 5 years ago now? 7 years ago now?
Mm-hmm.
Him saying, we're only contracted for three. And her kind of implying, well, if you don't want to be in all of them, you don't have to live. Like the character doesn't have to live. And then, so then it was like just kind of known that it was going to be five. But Warner Brothers, I don't think ever committed to more than three. Other than Joe says it, so if we can keep going, we will. Like, why are they going to turn down somebody kicking out scripts for them if it makes them money?
Yeah.
Right. And that's how I remember all of it. But I also remember the shock. Well, good.
So the Twitter, she re-shares a post, which is unavailable, and I've tried to pull it up on the web archive, you know, the Wayback Machine, and it isn't pulling there, so I don't know what the status said. Okay. But she just tweets, it's the number five, and then five in English, and then we have cinq, funf, cinco, and cinque, which...
That's what it was, five, not hello.
I'm going to figure out which languages other than English and Spanish those are. I think funf is German, but I'm not sure on that. Okay, so what is
cinque? It's absolutely, I know for a fact it is German.
Perfect. I'm using Google Translate, everyone, because I don't know what else to use. All I'm good at is Spanish, so nobody at me. But this tweet was from October of 2016, October 13th.
Right, so that and that's before that the movie tweet came out. Been,
yeah, that was 1 month before the movie came out, roughly.
Right.
Okay.
And after that fan event, because that blindsided them, I think they were just done with production on the first one when that fan event was.
Yeah. According to the same MuggleNet article that I just pulled that quote from, at the moment that was announced, the actors who were there, including Allison, Eddie, Dan, they did look genuinely shocked when she said that. Apparently, David Yates did not look very shocked when she said that, but when he was asked about it, he said it wasn't something that he knew until then.
See, that's the thing. I remember them all looking shocked, but maybe that's just me.
Well, I mean, that I can believe, that they weren't really aware until then that that was something that was intended by the author, but apparently I may have completely misunderstood some of the recent reports about the interviews with the Davids, because it was my understanding that they just found out about the fact that there was intended to be five in recent history. But this tells a different story.
Yeah, see, and I just remember that fan event being the thing that kind of blindsided everybody, but I think they thought, hey, if this does well, sure, five's fine. It's two more movies than we slated. You know what I mean?
And I remember I was thrilled when I found out there was supposed to be five. I was happy about it.
Well, to me, this After whole the thing first seemed one... like it was going to be a fun mishaps around the world.
And also, we could do a whole episode on the emotional roller coaster of, hooray, there's more movies, to, okay, so Crimes of Grindelwald was what it was, so we should probably, and then all of the other things outside of the franchise itself that's affecting your reaction to it. There's a lot that you can, if we... like took a retrospective journey at our emotional, you know, development between the announcement of the first movie to where we have been since then, that could actually fill several episodes, probably.
True.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. I have now translated all of the things. So
lovely. What do you got?
We have five. That's English, cool. The first movie took place in America. Cinq, C-I-N-Q, is French, which tracks with second movie, second right? Movie. We got French Ministry of Magic. Cool.
Yes.
And then Fünf, so German for five. Secrets of Dumbledore was, a lot was happening there in Germany, so.
Yeah.
Then, mm-hmm.
Cinco, which is Spanish for five. That could have been anywhere.
Could have been everywhere.
Weren't we supposed to go to Brazil or weren't we supposed to go to South America?
There was talk of South America, yeah.
That's what I kept. They seemed to get the impression that that meant South America, but there was never any confirmation. And the only definitiveness was the Spanish. And when you think World War II lead up and all that stuff, I mean, it's highly likely it would have stayed in Europe. So we don't really have a definitive.
And there's so many Spanish-speaking countries. It's, and then number five was Cinque, which is C-I-N-Q-U-E, and that's Italian for five. So I guess we missed out on Italy and
I guess we
likely
did.
South America.
Yep.
I think, I mean, knowing that what was it, the Wizarding World president or whatever from it shows how much I've kept this all in my head at this point. With her being from, where was she, Brazil? Was she from Brazil?
Yes, right?
The so, president of Macuza?
No, not Macuza.
The candidate, right? It was the Brazilian candidate.
Oh, yes, the Brazilian candidate.
But the part that throws me off about that is five the same in Portuguese as it is in Spanish? Because Brazil speaks Portuguese, doesn't it? They're not Spanish.
They're not. Brazil and that's Portuguese. I don't know.
Is there a relation? I don't mean to display my ignorance here, but is there a relationship between the Spanish language and the Portuguese language?
There is, and it looks like Cinco is also potentially five in Portuguese.
There's a lot of cognates.
So maybe we were supposed to go to Brazil.
Because I remember Brazil being we're going to Brazil. Like, that was a thing that I remember hearing a lot. But then I remember people saying Spanish, Cinco, and I was like, I don't know enough languages for this. Barely can handle the few I do know and what I know in them, other than English being the fluent language for me.
Wasn't there talk, like, while filming was happening for Secrets of Dumbledore, before the global pandemic kind of halted filming and changed plans, weren't there supposed to be scenes in Brazil?
There were.
I think so.
So if we look at it that way, then maybe film four was supposed to be in Brazil.
But that's why I'm wondering. Like, film four could have been, because if we go in order, it's, like you said, America, English, French. We had the French Ministry of Magic. The third one was a big German influence. So then it would have been somewhere Spanish for four.
I mean, it was a Brazilian actress, I believe. Isn't Vincência Santos the person who ultimately ends up winning the election?
Yes.
Was she?
Yes.
I know she was played by a Brazilian actress. She was a Brazilian witch, yes?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yes.
So then that would have fit with that as... Yeah, that would have fit with that as well. She becomes the supreme mugwump for the International Confederation of Wizards.
Yep,
and
wizards.
Then she starts having so many issues in her own country. And she probably would become very involved with the fight against Grindelwald. So it would make sense that they would travel to Brazil.
Yeah, I think it tracks. Apparently,
they'd be back to Italy. Apparently, that's where Grindelwald goes down. If these languages were right.
Well, and if we're coming up on, like, World War II, being in Italy makes sense with some of the things that were going on there. And since we theoretically already did Germany.
Well, the other thing is, I don't know how much history you guys studied, but that was what I studied in college. And so when you look at how Europe fell, it fell through Italy.
Yeah.
like that was its kind of undoing, was coming up through Italy. And then the other fronts also closed in. So it would make sense that the last movie would have a huge Italian influence if we are talking height of World War II or height of the end of World War II in the 40s. So kind of would track.
That makes sense. Because they never actually say, all they ever talk about is the epic showdown between Dumbledore and Grindelwald that it took place in 1945, but they never say where they were at the time.
They never say where. Mm-hmm. And maybe they aren't in Italy. Maybe that isn't where it goes down, but they come through Italy for whatever. Like I said, because the Americans kind of came up through the boot, so to speak, and that was one of the bigger pushes on that front. As Italy fell. So that's how we get Eisenhower as a president later, I believe. If I'm remembering my... He was the general that came up through Italy. Now I'm going to Google that because I'm also not as up on my history as I used to be.
Well, while you're doing that, we are going to actually be visiting a couple of other countries in our minds during our main discussion for today. But first, shall we deal with the owl post that we have got coming in?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. I can go to that. Yes, he was. I don't know if he came up. I got a quick thing. He was definitely the World War II general I'm thinking of, though. All right, let me go to the owl post, because that's more important. We have an owl post from Jerry, and here are some of her theme park thoughts from the last episode. She loved the episode, and it brought back memories of her two visits to Universal Orlando Wizarding World, one in early December, just before COVID hit everything. Love everything. The queues, especially Escape from Gringotts, Hogwarts Express, ice cream lights on Hogwarts Castle at night, and so much more. Epic Universe, Circuit Show, want creatures up close, and like in Osaka, but no more of the Nagini tragic story. I loved her character in movie 2, but hate knowing her tragic end. New York subway needs stops named for Newt and Jacob. Loved the Paris mini limo decorated shop or stop. And sorry for bad spelling, she says. She just had cataract. Oh, you had cataract surgery. I'm sorry. And my dad had it around the same age. That sucks. Or well, I guess it'll be better now, though, Jerry. And then she says she loves the podcast. She's got her notes, Jerry. About what she liked from her visit, which is always fun. I hope when I'm 66 that I'm still
sending messages to podcasts that I like.
Right, same.
I'm pretty sure I will be. I hope I'm still podcasting when I'm 66. I don't know if I'm ever going to stop doing it now that I've started.
Yeah, I was going to say... I fail at social media, so, you know, I think podcasts are my only outlet left.
I just can't help it when you put a microphone in front of my face or when you put me in front of a crowd with a microphone. I can't stop. That's why I need a doc and co-host, because if you just put it in front of me and said go, I would be here all day.
I think we'd all listen to it, too.
I would.
If we just had, like, the Jeff, all-day episode marathon or something, and it's just what came to Jeff's brain when they're not given a doc, they're not given a topic, they're just told, all right, Jeff, we need an episode. Go.
Go.
You know what? I tell you what, if any media companies out there ever want to actually do the Truman Show, but for real, I'll do the Truman Show.
I love it. I'd watch.
I want the old like radio shows like from the 40s and 50s back a little bit. Updated.
Great. I'll
and
trick
more
it.
Modern.
Fine, but I'm not tricking anybody into thinking the apocalypse is really happening.
No, I didn't say War of the Worlds.
That's the best part.
Okay, fine. I'll trick people into thinking one apocalypse is happening, but that's
okay,
it.
Thank you. Thank
you. Is it going to be that
You're
hard
welcome.
To trick them? COVID.
I don't
things
know
that are going on in the world might not be that
I
hard
don't,
to trick them.
I don't know but anyway, back to the
all right
theme park.
Yeah, we've got one
all.
More then from Albert, and he suggests or she, actually, I don't know if it's a boy or girl. Albert suggests a possible spinoff, they, and expanding the wizarding world. Rehire Jude Law's Dumbledore. A bit of aging, makeup, video effects, of course. For him, this is the dream scenario, where he actually gets to be Dumbledore, as he read about in the books. Plus, he'd age perfectly into season 7. Okay, so they want him to come back for the show?
Ooh, okay.
I think is what I'm understanding, which I like. I like the idea. Jude Law played a good Dumbledore. I was very impressed.
He did, then, but...
But what?
I don't know what exactly this Max show is going to look like, but my spidey sense is that they want this whole thing to essentially be a rebrand. So there might be cameos, but it's not like when they got Patrick Stewart to come back and do 3 seasons of Picard, because it would have been blasphemous to get anybody else to play that role. But with this, it kind of feels like they want to redo the entire thing top to bottom, because if you bring in somebody from one of the other camps, be it the original Potter films or the Fantastic Beasts films, and you have them reprise a role that they've already played, then they've got a foot in both camps. But they want this thing to stand entirely on its own, so they may get names, like big ones, to play some of these parts, but I think that they want it to be people who have not done this at all yet.
All right, that's fair. But here's the only point I'm going to make, and I think I'm on Albert's camp a little bit here. We had Richard Harris play Dumbledore. In my opinion, he was booked Dumbledore to a T, put on screen, and then he passed away. And then we got, he just died. I'm awful with names.
Michael Gambon.
Michael Gambon, who is a great actor, was not right for this at all, in my opinion. I'm sure there's people who love him. I'm sorry if you're one of the people who does, but he was not right for Dumbledore. Not in my opinion. And then we had Jude Law come back in, and to me, he recaptured what was there or what was good about book Dumbledore in a younger form. So I get what you're saying and your argument is, but I don't know who else you get that captures book Dumbledore. And if they do this show, they're going to want to kind of have more of the books in it, more of the, you know, story that was cut out the first time round. So then my question is, who else do you get?
Well, here's the thing about the Dumbledore character. Good luck finding a human being that can perfectly encapsulate everything about Dumbledore, because the trouble with the character of Dumbledore is there's always going to be at least one aspect of Dumbledore that they can't quite carry off. Example, Richard Harris. He had the wisdom and the very meditative qualities of an intelligent Dumbledore who has learned from his experiences and wants to pass that knowledge on. Michael Gambon has the grit and the bitterness of a Dumbledore who has clearly not aged well with everything that's happened to him, and he was a lot more physically active than Richard Harris. Because what I always said about the Dumbledores in the films is that with Richard Harris, he looked and sounded exactly the way I pictured Dumbledore, but he isn't physically active enough to do the stuff that Dumbledore has to do in Order of the Phoenix and Half-Blood Prince, so that was never going to work. It was going to be so much stunt doubling that they would have had to agonize over those shots. Whereas Michael Gambon, he doesn't come across as sentimental enough to carry off that aspect of Dumbledore. Yeah, he was. Not by a lot, but he was. And then with Jude Law, a big part of Dumbledore's character in this Fantastic Beasts series is the agonizing love arc between him and Grindelwald. And if you want somebody who can bring that off, you want Jude Law, because boy, does he do angst and love really, really well. Especially, you know, the romance. I say it again, and it isn't just because I want to see the two of them kissing, although I'm sure that would be very nice, but the romantic chemistry was there between him and, yeah, it was there between him and Mads Mikkelsen. wasn't quite there with him and Johnny Depp, but I don't buy the romantic chemistry with Johnny Depp and anybody. Well, that's all I'm going to say about Johnny Depp, I promise. But
that's fair.
See,
that's fair.
But you see the problem. The author has created such a character with Dumbledore, you're never going to get an actor who's going to perfectly carry off every aspect of his personality, because people like that don't exist. They only exist on paper. So you're going to have to settle in at least one category, no matter who they get to play Dumbledore.
But see, I guess that's where you and I differ on how the books read. Because you're right, there's more physical activity going on in the later books in terms of movement for Dumbledore. But in terms of how that character is portrayed, you get the, did you put your name into the goblet, like screaming that makes no sense.
People get way too people get too upset about it. That is my hot take on that moment. People have been memeing that so hard, and the memes are funny. It just, people get genuinely up in arms about his interpretation of that line. So what?
But to me, the problem with, from the time he takes over to the end of those movies, is that to me, Dumbledore, all through those books, is more of the first, where he's learned from his mistakes. He is calmer about things for that reason. And you see the did you put your name in the Goblet of Fire, you're right, is the memeable example. But this angry side of Dumbledore is not what you see in those seven books. Not really. And the only part that Richard Harris probably couldn't have done, like you said, is that physical stuff. And I'm sure they would have dealt with it if he had lived. But to me, Jude Law can be aged up. He could do the more physical stuff. And he can play the calmer side, because we saw him play the kind of angstier, younger side in these. So you see where it started, you see where it's going. And I don't know who else can do that. I don't know who else can get close enough, because you're right. Nobody can really embody all of it.
Meanwhile, I'm in the camp that there's not even showrunners and producers attached to this series. I think it's dead on arrival. I think they jumped the gun massively, and I don't think it's going to pan out.
I really think they announced it out of a fear of what's going on with Percy Jackson, Hunger Games.
Mm-hmm. Twilight.
Twilight. All of these other popular series, and they don't know what they're doing yet.
Well, and it's like, the Davids have said they have no interest in being a part of the series, so now you have to find a showrunner that wants to weed into those woods, which is a lot to ask. And it's not going to give them what they want, ultimately, right? Because they just want a clean sweep, they want better press, and it's not going to get it for them, especially because trying to, like, find talent to attach to that's going to be a nightmare. Like, well, they're better off just being chill for a bit, honestly.
Without getting too deep into opinions about things that I know have been discussed on this and every other podcast very, very much, that people feel very, very strongly about, as they should, I just want to leave it at this. I will always love the films and the books and all of the fan-created content, and I will always want to talk about them. I will always want to go to conventions to celebrate them and to meet people and to engage in these discussions. I will always want to do that. But as far as continuing the thing itself and creating new things in this space, sometimes you just have to accept that you've told the story that you need to tell, and that you've made what you need to make, and then let it be what it is. The further you push it, and the longer you wait to finally accept that you can let something go and just celebrate it for what it is, the more you run the risk of ruining it, or creating something that polarizes the fans so much that it actually pushes them out of wanting to do this anymore.
True.
Wholeheartedly agree.
Well, to go back to just wrap up Albert's statements here, they also really liked Glasgow as McGonagall, and seeing what she maybe had more to bring to the show. And because they said that they think because nothing ties the first eight films to Fantastic Beasts, why not use some of these actors again? And I think we've exhausted our arguments for why we do and don't like that. So I don't, that was his their last statement. And then they have this to add. How do you feel about expansions and explorations and detours throughout the TV series? Example, flyer for a Hogwarts excursion to Wagadu, or a background of a scene in the background or something tied in. So basically, how do we feel about other tie-ins to the wider Wizarding World if they do the show and this goes through?
If you're going to do that, do it very, very thoughtfully and do it very, very carefully. Because as we have proven, as every other podcast, YouTube show, panel, whatever has proven, we will find the teeny tiny details. We will analyze them to death and we will have very strong reactions to even the tiniest things. Maybe not the people on this particular episode, but it's going to happen. If you're going to create something that has such a strong fandom where the fans are so passionate about the thing you're creating, and then you're going to say, oh, let's throw in these little Easter eggs, that'll be fun. You better get it right. Because if you don't, then they're going to take to social media and they're probably going to cancel you on TikTok. Because that is how people deal with their problems now.
You know, I need someone to cancel me on TikTok, if I'm being honest.
That's okay. Cancel me everywhere I fail at social media.
Like, cancel me on TikTok, someone. Like, honestly.
You probably have more followers than I do there. No idea.
I think what you guys are getting at is that TikTok doesn't really need to be a thing, and I'll spare you my sermon on my opinions of TikTok in general, but all I will say is if you get canceled on TikTok, the goal is to use, I think, TikTok to cancel you in all aspects of life, so I do not recommend encouraging people to do that unto you. Just maybe delete the TikTok app from your phone and ask the people closest to you to limit their usage of the phrase TikTok on a daily basis.
Oh, jeez.
I think TikTok cancellations are really fascinating because of the real-time metrics of them and how quickly they happen. And then, boom, they're gone because there's so many things happening on TikTok. And that's something for another day to discuss. I just find them really fascinating. So if anyone wants
I to, literally you know, open TikTok, post my little good news video, and leave.
I go look at book recommendations.
I never use it.
I look at the book recommendations. And sometimes I fall down really weird rabbit holes. And then I dig myself out of them.
Seeing if I want book recs, I just hit up your Instagram.
Aw, thanks.
Are we ready for the main discussion?
Yes, I think we are.
We've talked a little bit about what's going to be our topic for today already, about traveling. But for today's main discussion, what we really want to kind of discuss is, where would you like to see Newt and the gang go around the world? Because we either are or are not ever going to see more adventures about this group of people ever again, but hypothetically, if they were to continue to venture out in cinema, where do we want them to do it? Liz, I think you have got something in here first. What was your vote?
Yeah, so my vote kind of goes back to our discussion of the five languages saying the word five. I think it would have been really fun to go to South America and specifically Brazil, mostly because it's a part of the Wizarding World we haven't really explored a ton between all the different media that's in the Wizarding World right now. Like, we get a little bit in Hogwarts Mystery with the Castella Bruxo. I really don't like that pronunciation, but I'm going to go with it.
It's okay. In my just small spoiler for my own research, there are times where I intentionally chose to omit the names of specific places or locations or even groups of people because I did not want to pronounce them incorrectly.
Cool.
So you're totally fine on that.
Awesome. So we do get a Brazilian wizarding student in Hogwarts Mystery, and that's cool. I guess mini spoiler, depending on where you're at in Hogwarts Mystery.
I don't have it yet.
You're not missing much, honestly. That could be a whole episode. Me talking about how angry I am at the creature depictions in Hogwarts Mystery.
Uh-oh. Don't talk to Marjo. I don't know if she feels the same way.
I think it would have been really neat, and I mentioned in my little discussion, like, that maybe we set the stage for that in Secrets of Dumbledore with the Brazilian candidate, to have gone there. But the Brazilian slash, assumedly, it's the Wizarding World School for all of South America, since it's the only one there we know about. They're known for, like, their herbology and their magizoology program. And I think it would have been really fun to see Newt go out there as, like, he was invited to give a talk on something and to really see him show that side of himself, like the excited sharing everything he knows about a creature to people that are going to appreciate it a bit more than just Jacob being like, wow, that's cool. And right, like in a classroom of students that's like, this is what they do. That's what they're there for. And to see him like appreciated in that way, I think would be really fun. And also, he deserves it. I also think it would be really fun to see Kaiporas, which they're kind of like little poltergeisty kind of vibes that guard the Brazilian Wizarding School. Them and the Nifflers interacting.
Because the Niffler is a mischievous creature who frequently busts out of the Newt case, or because are they in any way physically similar to Nifflers? Do they steal treasure?
They're not physically similar, but I feel like because of Pastry's kind of like attitude and what we've seen so far of his little like mini hijinks through the franchise, I feel like it would be an interesting like matchup to watch them kind of like hijinks each other in a way, and like how they interact, I think could be really interesting.
Okay.
Look, I'm a weird one. We're just gonna put that out there. if I remember correctly, Kaiporas, they're like semi-humanoid. Let me double check that, because there's a lot of different depictions of them in folklore, and I don't remember which one we actually go with in the wizarding world. Because
so while you're looking that up,
I think of it, yeah, they're more humanoid in appearance. They have red hair in a lot of depictions. That's cool.
So I wonder about what you written here about Newt Scamander doing a visiting lecture. You know how I would do that, because I do think it would be fun to see that. I think the reason Newt does his job the way he does is he can educate people one-on-one, and he can even speak to small groups. But I think the reason he does his solitary traveling and then writes his book is because that's how he's comfortable distributing information. I wonder if at the beginning of the film you could have him attempting to deliver a lecture but not being that comfortable doing it, because it seems like the kind of thing that Newt would be expected to give a speech. He would do it reluctantly. It might not go that well. Mm-hmm. But then after whatever experiences he would have in the fourth movie, it would actually empower him to say, you know what? I think perhaps I can deliver this speech in a different way. And then he goes back and takes another shot at it. So you could even bookend the film that way.
I think that would be fun, because I personally think Newt has grown a lot as a character and with his confidence over just like the three films we've seen so far. So I think that could work really well to continue to show that and how he's like coming into his person. I don't know. That could be fun. Well, oh, yeah. And then I just think there's some cool other Brazilian folkloric creatures that could be introduced. There's two different river monsters that I have. There's tons of things that could end up in there. But the most interesting to me was the Yakumama, which is a huge serpent that is said to live in the Amazon River, which goes, you know, through Brazil and several other parts of South America. I don't know all of them because I'm bad at geography.
So similar to the Loch Ness monster, perhaps?
Perhaps.
Because I don't want to give away too much until we get to what I had to share, but I've noticed that in searching for magical creatures from other, you know, traditions across the world, there are a lot of... There are a lot of big old monsters living in bodies of water. Have you ever noticed that before?
There are. And the number of big things supposedly living in bodies of water compared to how many of those we see in the wizarding world doesn't line up, in my opinion. I feel like we should be seeing a lot more big things that live in bodies of water within the magical world.
I mean, that ties in with the historical fear of travel by sea, too.
Well, yeah, and we do at Hogwarts in the Black Lake, we do get the giant squid, and there's a lot of other things that live at the bottom of that lake. So they've got their own magical creatures that live in water. They don't need the great big baddies. Although they do, in the Harry Potter version of the magical world, don't they still have the Loch Ness monster? Didn't he come up?
Well, so yeah, the Loch Ness monster is a Kelpie. Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
Muggles don't know it's a Kelpie, or that they call it a Kelpie, but they do. Mm-hmm. It is one thing they agree on, is in Lake Loch Ness, there's something down there.
Yes, there's something there. I think watching Newt interact with some of these big water-based would be interesting, right? We saw some of it with his Kelpie, right, in the case, which I thought were really fun scenes, even though short-lived. Because, you know, we didn't really get a lot of them. And also, part of what makes the Yakumama interesting to me is they think it's derived, like, from the Titanoboa, that it could just actually be the Titanoboa still alive. just going into the water. And for those that don't know, like, the Titanoboa is considered... And we have the vertebra of it. It's, like, the largest snake that's... said to have ever lived on the earth, which is really cool. There's a discrepancy in their size. Like, the Yakumama is said to be like 120 feet long. The Titanoboa was not that big. But I guess if it's just eating everything in the Amazon River, maybe it could be that big. Lots of protein. I don't know. And the other creature I thought was interesting, it goes by several different names. The one I found most commonly was the Encantados, but also called the Bota. And they're magical river dolphins that will come on land during, like, noisy human events and disguise themselves. And they may or may not kidnap women and take them to their underwater land.
Gross.
And I'm not cool with kidnapping, just so we're clear. I do not support kidnapping.
That's good to know.
Yeah. But I thought it could be in, like, the notion of, like, this underwater place, I thought could be really interesting visually in a film. And I don't know how that could come up, because I don't write films. But just the idea of it, I thought was really interesting, and being like, oh, look, it's a dolphin. Why is a dolphin in the Amazon River? And kind of following it back to, oh, this maybe isn't just a dolphin. And I thought that was interesting. Like, maybe it's something new to Newt, and he's like, what is this? And we get to see him kind of discover a new creature together, because we didn't really have that a ton, right? We see him interacting with things he knows of and is comfortable with, so I think that could be interesting to put him slightly outside of his comfort zone. Maybe. I don't know.
See, thinking about this, just all the background information that we have become more aware of over the years of what goes into making a film and getting certain shots, I'm looking at this list because we've clearly all thought the same thing. Which magical creatures are we likely to encounter in these countries? Because I've got a couple listed myself. And as we've mentioned, a lot of these, you know, monsters live in great big giant bodies of water. Even if you don't do massive underwater shoots like James Cameron, you still have to put a lot of money into anything that involves water, because getting good high quality shots of things that are in or around large bodies of water, that's gonna eat up a lot of your budget. So you're gonna have to make up some land critters while you're at it.
I think they should just put the budget that they're willing to spend on the show into these hypothetical underwater shots, Jeff. That's a better use of the budget.
Great. Fantastic Beasts 4, The Way of Water.
Yeah. Except we're not, like, using the same plot from the first movie again, but worse.
Terrific.
It's mostly a pipe dream, because it's something I've always wanted to see happen, and I think it's something we don't get a lot of in terms of, like, South American inclusion in a lot of franchises. And I think we should include it because they have some really cool stuff, and I find it all really interesting, and maybe that's because of where I grew up, and that's cool. I also just want to see Magical River Dolphins.
I want to see Magical River Dolphins, too. I want to see that.
Game.
Perfect. So we're good then. Magical River, Fantastic Beasts, and the Magical River Dolphins, number 4. Mean,
perfect.
And in all reality, they were going to Brazil for the next movie anyway. This all tracks. I like it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
See, that was a very practical way of looking at it, is you chose a country that we were likely to get to anyway, so you actually chose a lot of stuff that they could have very well ended up using. I don't think that my choice would actually end up getting used, but I still think it sounds like a fun place for them to go and visit. I think I want to send Newt and the gang to Canada. Because when people think of North America, or when people think of America, they always think of the continental United States, the 50 states. They don't think of Canada. But
hijack that name.
We did kind of hijack that name. But you know what? Canada is a beautiful place with a lot going on. And I don't think they get enough credit. So I think it would be fun if we sent Newt and the gang to Canada. The more I see of Canada... I seem to be collecting more and more friends as I delve deeper into podcasting who live in that part of the world, and a lot of times they'll send me pictures, or I'll see them on their Instagrams of, like, the places in their areas that they're visiting, and Canada is a beautiful place with a ton of places that they could do really beautiful nature shots. So there's your on-location filming. They could film it in a lot of, you know, any of the Canadian provinces, I think, would probably do it in British Columbia or Ontario. And for the things that would take place within the city, I don't know if they would film them on location or not. They would probably have to build those sets on a lot, because something that was occurring to me as I was weighing different countries that I'd like to see Newt and the gang visit is they're not visiting them as they are now. They are visiting them as they are in the 19... Like, if we're considering the next film, we are into the 1930s. So first, I looked this up because I figure if we're going to go to Canada, we are likely to go to Ontario, British Columbia, or Manitoba. Those are the three I think would probably be the most likely, because when we're actually... We're not going to be out in the woods hunting for creatures the whole time. At some point, they're probably going to have to go into the city. So I figure if they're in Ontario, they're going to probably go to Toronto. If they're in British Columbia, they're probably going to go to Victoria. And if they're in Manitoba, they're going to go to Winnipeg. So I checked, and all of those cities were founded well before the events of where the next movie would be taking place. So first, I had to make sure I wasn't sending Newt and the gang to a city that wouldn't have existed yet. Because I will admit, I don't know when every country was founded, and I don't know when every city was founded. I don't even know when every state in the United States became a state. I don't know. So I had to check to make sure they did exist, so they're all fair game. Also, nice. I like... the cold. Let me be clear, because I've said this a lot recently, because the weather here where I live has been doing this thing where it can't decide from one day to the next if it wants to be very cold or if it wants to be a little bit more on the warmer side. It keeps jumping back and forth between the 30s and the 60s. So
I know I'm sick.
I like the cold, but I like it if it's consistent or it gradually gets colder or gradually gets warmer and I can feel it kind of coming on. I'm comfortable with that. But in general, I do like the cold. I love coats. I love scarves. I love outerwear. It's my favorite part of fashion. Don't know why, just is. And we know that Colleen Atwood and company can cut a mean coat. When Newt Scamander's coat became available with the first film, I got it. When Dumbledore's coat from the Secrets from the Crimes of Grindelwald film came out, I got that one too. So I would love it if they would send them somewhere that would result in some iconic outerwear for Newt and the gang. Just put them in coats, scarves, hats, all kinds of warm stuff. Just it would be I think it would be great for Colleen Atwood and company in the costume design department, the things that they could put Newt and the gang in if they were traveling into like a harsh winter in Winnipeg. I would love to see what they would design for that.
Queenie's coat would be iconic, just so we're clear.
Oh gosh, yes. Yes.
It would be the best one.
It would be the very best one. Although, if we're going to introduce what has been established in the films back into it, regrettably, unless they just kind of came to visit for a little while, I don't think we would get Queenie and her fabulous coat, because I think it was established that Queenie and Jacob are going to get married and then go off and do their thing and not really have too much of a terribly active role in the rest of what's going to go on.
Okay, hear me out.
Okay.
We cut ahead several years, right? Because why not? That's my answer. Why not? And since we already know Newt and Tina get married, maybe they get married in Canada and then Queenie and them come. That's my fan theory right now. That's how it can happen.
Sold. Didn't even take that much convincing. I'll buy it.
Perfect. I didn't have a lot use to convince other than it should happen.
Didn't need it. Only use what you need. Don't oversell it. You got it.
That's how we get Queenie in a good coat.
Yes, Queenie in a good coat. That's what I need. That's the only reason we need to go there. So as we mentioned, there are a lot of traditions that involve scary monsters living in large bodies of water. There are a ton of lake monsters in Canada. I chose three, and I'll admit I do not have a comprehensive dossier on each of these critters, but just to kind of pull out a few, they could go with any one of these because I doubt we'd get them all. But for one, there is, if I pronounce these wrong, I'm sorry, the Thetis Lake Monster, or Canada's Gillman, which is a reptilian creature first spotted in 1972, so this probably wouldn't work. They'd have to fudge the origins of this. It says it was first spotted in 1972 near Thetis Lake, which is located outside of Victoria, British Columbia. So there you go, if they go there. They would probably have to come up with a new backstory for this creature, because if it wasn't first sighted until 1972, then maybe Newt could be the first one to sight it.
Ooh.
Maybe that. But supposedly, a 16-year-old and a 17-year-old went to the Royal Canadian Mounted Police claiming that they saw a spontaneous swelling of water and were then chased by a terrifying monster that resembled the 1954 movie The Creature from the Black Lagoon.
I mean, that's a vibe, honestly. I like that.
There are other sightings that have happened since. Usually it looks like it's teenagers who are up near the lake messing with stuff they shouldn't be, and then they come back and claim they were attacked by a monster. Picture, you know, the opening of How the Grinch Stole Christmas, the one with Jim Carrey in it. But you could factor this in. Like, there could be some kind of magic. You what?
I just said it was a good opening scene.
Yeah, there's your opening scene. It's not, you know, giving birth to a baby creature that's going to end up telling the future, but you can't do that every movie.
Yeah, that's fair. That does get repetitive.
So lake monster number two is the Trout Lake Monster, supposedly inhabiting Big Trout Lake in northern Ontario. And in 2010, photographs of an unidentified carcass prompted internet speculation about a mystery creature and retellings of local First Nations legends of an animal said to presage bad news. So I guess that would, what they're essentially saying here is that this is a creature that would be a bad omen.
It's a harbinger of doom.
Yes.
Great.
But they, based on the physical appearance of this creature, they weren't really sure exactly what it was. But supposedly there was a professor at the University of Toronto who identified that it was an animal carcass, most likely an ordinary mink in a state of decomposition. Gross.
Ugh. Gross. But also sad for the dead mink. So...
But there are, I will, this is the part where I mentioned earlier that there are the names of certain groups of people and words that they use to describe creatures that I'm not going to try to pronounce because I will do it badly. But there is a tradition in Canada that has a legend of a creature that the translation of which is essentially the ugly one, and according to that legend, it feeds on beavers, lives in swampy creek areas, and is a bad omen. So there is... So unlike the Thetis Lake monster, the Trout Lake monster has some origins already attached to it. So maybe if they did end up going to Ontario, then this would be one that they could use because it already has some origins that go back a little bit farther. So a little bit more content to work with as far as the origin of the creature.
Nice, nice. I'm trying to find a picture of this one. I'm not having much luck.
I don't think you're probably going to find too many creatures of it. I really couldn't. There were a few of the Thetis Lake monster, but again, a lot of the images that are meant to, I think, represent that one are similar to the creature from the Black Lagoon. But with the Trout Lake monster, I don't know. But the third one that I found is... Oh, did you find it?
I did find pictures. Yeah, it's a little... It does look like a mink or like something else in the weaselid family that kind of is like had alopecia or something on the entirety of its face. And has tusks.
Ooh. Tusks can be scary.
They're really tiny tusks, but they might grow.
Yeah, tiny tusks like can be hair, cute.
It's just like the hair fell out on his face. It's not like ripped out. And that might just be from like being in the water, though. I don't know how that works.
Well, the third one I think would probably be the least terrifying of the three. It is the Turtle Lake monster. Supposedly inhabiting Turtle Lake in West Central Saskatchewan, Canada. Not a very large creature, about... Actually, no, I'm not great with the metric system. Is 3 to 9 meters long? Would that be a big creature or not?
Well, a meter's around, like, 3 feet, isn't it? Or...
Well, then, yeah, this would be a big one, then. I'm sorry, the only time I pretend to understand the metric system is that when I go running, I count my runs in kilometers, not miles.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah, 3 to 9 meters long, scaly or smooth, with no dorsal fin, and a head resembling a dog, a seahorse, or a pig. So this description sounds like the most magical creature ish because many magical creatures that we've encountered in this space, they resemble either a creature that we already know or a combination of creatures that we already know. So this might give them, as far as the design of the creature, the easiest time, you know, in the design department, because they would probably have the easiest time with references as far as, okay, what do we make this look like? But this is kind of like you know, Sasquatch, where at least once a year, somebody local claims to have had an encounter with this beast, and there are supposed sightings that are attributed by non-believers to a large lake sturgeon or a population of prehistoric something that starts with a P that I can't pronounce. Plesiosaurs?
Oh, yes. Yeah, plesiosaurs.
I said that right.
Yeah. I love a good plesiosaur.
So on the one hand, you've got one creature that has something that they can reference that has a lot of sightings that looks like a movie monster that people already know. So that one might have the most appeal. And then you have one that is, I don't see them going with the big trout out of the three. I don't see them going with the big trout or the Trout Lake monster. I'd say probably the Turtle Lake monster would be most likely. The Thetis Lake monster would be second most likely, but I don't see them going with the Trout Lake monster.
Hmm. I'm not sure which one I think they'd go with, because I think they're all really fun. And they can always like write anything off as, well, wizards have known about it this whole time. Muggles just now saw it, you know?
Yeah, that is a good go-to. That would be consistent.
Also, the ones with less images give them more...
That's true.
Options more for their art department.
Yeah, more creative liberties and freedoms, and you don't get someone like me who sees the chupacabra they made, and I'm like, excuse me? What is that?
This is not right.
So to round off some of the things that I found while I was looking up why Canada might be a good option for them to visit, I found out a very interesting fact. Apparently, for some time, it is not illegal to practice witchcraft in Canada, but it is illegal to pretend to be a witch in Canada. Specifically, Section 365 of the Criminal Code of Canada makes it illegal to engage in fraudulent activities related to witchcraft, fortune-telling, or making claims about the ability to locate lost or stolen items using occult or crafty sciences. Since 1892. So here's another tie-in for the wizarding world. Canada is much more predisposed to be magic-friendly because it's okay. They still would probably not understand the difference between what they think witchcraft is and what kids are actually studying at magic school to become witches and wizards, but you have greater potential, I think, in Canada than other countries we visited for a peaceful coexistence between magical and non-magical people. Because the magical people are still, I think, in Canada would be bound by the International Statute of Secrecy, but they probably live in far less fear of persecution.
That's true. You know, what stood out to me most there, Jeff, was that technically, I can't go and be a fortune teller in Canada as a new career.
If you are lying about it, see that's the thing. If you claim you can tell the future using divination methods that you learned in magic school, and they can't prove that you are making it up, then you're fine.
Wait a minute. It's
specifically
can't be a
But what if I just, like, taught myself tarot cards and I didn't learn it in magic school? Does that count as me pretending to be a witch because I didn't learn it in magic school?
Let's get real. Trelawney goes to Canada, she's going to be in jail.
Now, let's be clear here. If we're talking about Trelawney, I don't think we're dealing with tarot cards because there is nothing in the canon series to suggest that they learn about tarot cards in divination. The closest we ever see is Trelawney shuffling a pack of ordinary playing cards, and that is vastly different from reading tarot cards.
Very true.
I don't pretend to be an expert on reading tarot, but I have experienced enough of it with other people to be sure of that. I don't think they're teaching that at Hogwarts. So, as far as the reading of tarot cards, there are people who are doing that, but it would be down to proving that it's fake or that people have given you definite advice or had influence over your decisions based on information you gave them from the reading of the tarot cards that led to trouble. For example, if I wrote up a contract with you where I said, if you give me 10% of your annual income, I will give you business projections based on a reading of tarot cards. Those business projections turn out to be false and you lose a lot of money, but I gain a lot of money. Yeah, you could probably take me to court over that. But if you come to me every now and then for advice and I warn you ahead of time that I can't read things for definite certain in the cards, then I don't think you're going to get sued over that.
Awesome. Perfect.
So I can... it's proving that it's a fraud, I think.
Okay, so I can still have my backup plan of moving to Canada and being a fortune teller, is what I'm hearing.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, you can. But perfect. Even so, if we're going to go to Canada for a Wizarding World experience, be it Fantastic Beasts or the Harry Potter cinematic world based off of those canon books, then I think it's important to bear in mind that they make a very clear division between what Muggles call fortune telling and the kind of magic that they actually teach to magical children.
That's true. That's true.
So again, what the law says to me is it's the intention behind it. But I would think since this is something that is part of the law that people are expected to abide by in Canada, that they would be teaching Canadian witches and wizards who go to school that if you are going to go out there and act like you have a job and you want to incorporate your own magic into your job, be very, very careful about how you go about doing it. Because there's a law that says it's okay for magical people to exist, but their understanding of what is and isn't magic is different from ours. And if it is perceived that you are doing it a certain way, then you may get in trouble, not necessarily for risking the exposure of our world, but you may get in trouble with the laws that they are expected to abide by as well. So it's this really cool intersection between non-magical law and magical law that we don't normally get.
That's true. It would be really fun to see.
Yeah, because all we ever get is the British Ministry of Magic proving that they have absolutely no idea how to establish a government and represent the interests of its people. So let's see how Canada does it. Magical Parliament in Canada.
Sounds okay.
And the
to
last
me.
Thing... The last thing that I want to say about Canada, I know this doesn't exist, but since we're making stuff up, I wanted to share this just because I thought it was kind of fun. Because I was wondering the same thing I think a lot of us were, is if we're talking about how the magical world in this country is different from the ones we've spent more time in, then where are they educating the children? Because I figure Canada is part of North America, and since American magical children go to Ilvermorny, that's probably where the Canadian witches and wizards are going to school, right? But apparently, the fans have had a different idea. So at some point, the fans made up a Canadian magical school. This is on Hogwarts is here. .com, and I love it, so I'm just going to read this exactly as it's written. White Star Academy of Magic is a Canadian wizarding school located in the Laurentides of Quebec. It enrolls students mainly from the Canadian provinces of Quebec and to a lesser extent Ontario, but is open to any witch or wizard in North America wanting a French education. White Star is located in the Laurentian Mountains of Quebec, Canada, and is a beautiful palace with architecture similar to a basilica. The precise location of the school is unknown, as it was rendered unplottable. The school enjoys a healthy relationship with Ilvermorny School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, the English-speaking Canadian wizarding school located around Lake Nipigon in Ontario. Okay. So that part wrong. At the end, see, I might have been willing to believe that this was actually in an appraisal of magical education in Europe or whatever, but it's that last part at the end where it says that Ilvermorny is in Ontario that I'm like, really, guys, you're going to invent a fake Canadian magic school and you're not going to do your research? Ilvermorny is in Massachusetts. It's in the song.
Yeah.
So congratulations on botching that part of your research.
I mean, as someone associated with Hogwarts is here, the average user on that site's like 11. So it's probably like an 11-year-old that wrote that. So I'm not surprised they didn't do their research.
Okay, so an 11-year-old does enough research to know what the geography of Canada is, but they don't do enough research to recall that Ilvermorny is in Massachusetts.
Yeah, that sounds like something. I mean, in my line of work, adults do that. So I'm not putting it past an 11-year-old to do something like that.
Okay, but wait. But I have an 11-year-old who just got very mad that she had to write an argumentative paper without doing research to back up her arguments. Because that's what her teacher told her. And she was like, I don't know how I write this without the research to back up my arguments. She was very mad. So I would point out that not all 11-year-olds.
Well, no. But because I know the research, the demographics and where the majority of students on Hogwarts this year are from, because I'm associated with Hogwarts this year, I'm not surprised.
Okay, fair. But I'm just saying, not all 11-year-olds are that ignorant. Mine wouldn't be.
I'm glad you have taught yours better.
The other part of this that sticks out to me, especially if we're keeping in mind what you said about the average contributor being about 11 years old, what do they mean by a French education?
My guess is they took that from somewhere else, because that school was developed as part of like an online roleplay community outside of Hogwarts this year. So my guess is they copy-pasted some of that from elsewhere.
Ah.
Mm-hmm. The only thing that I can think is that it would be similar to how they structure boarding schools in France, which I don't pretend to be any kind of expert in. The only thing that did pop into my mind is when Fleur points out in Half-Blood Prince, when they're talking about their OWL results, that at Beaubaton, they sit their exams after 6 years of study, not five. And then she doesn't say anything about a follow-up exam, because at Hogwarts they do OWLs in fifth year and then they do newts at the end of their seventh year. So I'm assuming that means at Beaubaton you either do exams in back-to-back years, or you just do the one set of exams after 6 years of study. But
I mean, I'm wondering, could it also mean, because you know, parts of Canada do speak French, if that's just simply all they mean is like, if you want your kid to learn in French, like maybe they offer classes in both English and French.
That could be. I do not mean to project this as a stereotype or a thing that I believe in. I only know, based on my experience, I have met some people who come from French Canada. I do not expect that every French Canadian person does this, but I have met a few who will allow people to believe that they are French as opposed to French Canadian. And I have been made to understand by one of them that this is apparently a common practice, at least as far as he has experienced it. People assume he is French and he is okay with that. He lets them believe it. I didn't really get a clear explanation from him as to why that might be.
I think anybody who actually speaks French is going to know, though. Because, like, my husband, who studied in France and learned proper French, he makes a big deal about, oh, no, that person's Canadian. Like, he can hear it. And he'll put on French, like, movies and stuff. And I'm like, nah, these people are from Canada. And for me, who's ignorant and only knows what little French I studied in school, I'm like, I can't hear the difference. He goes, no, no, no. They have an accent. It's very pronounced. And I'm like, okay.
It's my understanding, too, that similar to like Spanish and how, you know, there's different words for different things in many of the Spanish-speaking countries, that it's the same with Canadian French, that it's not all exactly the same, that they have some different words and stuff that they use compared to like traditional French. Mm-hmm. Would that be the right way to say that?
And that's the thing. I'll hear my husband start laughing and I'll be like, what's going on? And whatever he's watching, which I just am not paying enough attention to. And luckily he puts subtitles on for me. He'll go, they're making fun of him because he's Canadian. You can hear it in the accent. I'm like, oh God. I'm like, oh, okay. So my husband's more of a world traveler, though. Speaks way more languages than I do. So.
Well, that is my pitch for Newt and Company traveling to Canada. So, Carolyn, where would you like to see everybody go?
Well, I mean, I have a lot of ones, and mine kind of tie into the time turner. So I think we're going to take our little conversation there and head on over to the Time Turner segment and have a fun little discussion with that.
A few times should do it, love.
And so, for our Time Turner today, I actually want to talk about Art Deco as an artistic movement at the time of Newt, and how that maybe would influence some of the places they go. We see it really heavily influenced, I think, in the second movie. You see a little bit of it in the first, which I will cover in a minute here as I'm kind of going through my little docs that I pulled up with the history of Art Deco. And then I will talk about some places that I think would be cool places to visit if you want to see some Art Deco style art. So we'll start with Art Deco as a style. It's referred to also as style moderne. It was a movement that started in Paris and France in the 1920s, and it evolved out mostly into Europe and the United States during the 30s. This was the official event that kind of launches Art Deco is the Exposition Internationale des Arts Décoratifs et Industriels Modernes. And I'm sure that Marjo is cringing at my pronunciation, but this was held in Paris in 1925. Art Deco design is represented by modernism, and it was expressed through, you'll see it in architecture, you'll see it in furniture, you'll see it in fashion. And these were crafted as kind of these sort of modern takes on luxury at the time. You'll see these, the distinguishing style that goes along with these are very, you'll see clean shapes and repeating patterns that have a kind of bold color choices. I say bold, I don't mean bright. I very much mean bold, because to me, Art Deco is always expressed in very muted colors, but very bold, contrasty kind of colors. And there may be exceptions to that. So, but you'll see it in lots of jade, silver type materials, and it's a lot on buildings. That's what you'll typically see it in. I find a lot of it in antique shops when I go looking around, because I love to look for Art Deco myself. But they are, the influences on them are things like Bauhaus and Cubism of the time. They also have an American Indian or American, a Native American influence, and some Egyptian influences on some of them, in terms of a lot of the shapes and things. And then let's see, what else? The era itself was between the 20s and held through most of the 1930s. It often gets confused with Art Nouveau, which is a more ornamental style that you'll see in architecture and jewelry. But that was earlier, and that kind of ends in the 1910s a little bit. So this kind of follows that. And it has, let's see, the Art Nouveau style was more nature-based as opposed to more clean shapes and modern geometric patterns. So I'm trying to think if there's anything else that really covers it. I'm double-checking my other article here real quick and see if there's anything I missed. There's an opulence that goes along with it. If you think of the 1920s and the height of Great Gatsby kind of styles and influences. There's a lot of books that kind of talk about it. I always think of, did either of you ever watch, or do you watch a lot of old movies? Have you ever seen MAME?
I have seen MAME.
I love that movie for its Art Deco references throughout most of the film. Particularly the Rosalind Russell version, not so much the Lucille Ball version, although the Lucille Ball version has great music. So that's a great movie to watch if you want a really cool visual representation of the timeline. Another one I like is Victor Victoria. It's another great Art Deco-y kind of movie that kind of hits the time period well. And then in terms of where I would like to see Newt go, I have a whole list of places that I think would be great. Because I found this really cool article from The Lonely Planet that maybe we can have put into the doc as a link for people of places that have great Art Deco references. And surprisingly, there is Durban, South Africa, that had a lot of Art Deco. And what I liked about this was a lot of people immediately go to the Americas and Europe for this kind of stuff, but this had way more places broader, which could have been really fun to see Newt and the gang go. I do love the idea of seeing them in Africa and some of the influences of magical creatures there. So they had a lot of Art Deco references in their buildings. Morocco in Casablanca, to stick with Africa, has a lot of cool Art Deco examples. They were a French colony, so that kind of explains the overlap of styles. I'm going to butcher this. Napier, New Zealand, they had some cool Art Deco references. Let's see who else is on this list. Los Angeles has a lot of Art Deco references to a lot of their older architecture, particularly the Christ's Resurrection Basilica Church in Kaunas? Oh, no, that's Lithuania.
That's Lithuania, yeah.
I went too far. Kaunas, Lithuania. That's the next one on here. And they have a poster. Okay, I'm going to skip Lithuania because it's not a ton. Shanghai, China had some Art Deco influences that I was very surprised to see on this list. This is due to some Chinese students who brought Art Deco back with them in the 1920s. And used Shanghai as a canvas for their newly international generation of architects who were looking for new styles. Mumbai, India. Well, wait a minute. Yeah, that's right. Mumbai is the new
name. Yep, Mumbai, India.
Formerly Bombay, which I did not realize because my experience with India is primarily Delhi and does not have any Art Deco. So this just makes me want to go visit Mumbai even more. But they have some 1930s building going on down there. And actually, Mumbai is also the center of Bollywood theater culture, so it kind of makes sense that they would have some of that influence, because their film actually is almost as old as Hollywood's.
Mm-hmm.
So it does correlate that they probably would have had some influences from the Western world, given being a British colony.
Are we wanting to skip over the America? I don't mean to interrupt your presentation, but seeing as we started off this whole thing in America and at least like three of the other places coming up are in America, are we wanting to go back to America?
No. I want to skip those. Although I do want to jump to Florida a little bit because Miami is a huge... Actually, why isn't Miami on here? It just really
says St. Petersburg.
St. Petersburg does not scream Art Deco to me. I'm skipping that one. Okay, I'm going to talk about Uruguay then a little bit.
Nice.
Lastly, I'm going to talk about Montevideo, Uruguay, because it has not as high of a profile as other South American countries, but has a huge Art Deco influence, going back to the economic boom and urban expansion in the 20s and 30s. So it might be a cool tie-in. I don't know how that would work with the Brazil one, but it would be a cool, maybe they have to go there for a little bit of that, you know, same.
Maybe they just full movie. On just go to Uruguay. Like, it can have its own spotlight, you know?
Oh, it can have its own episode, too. Yeah, its own film. There you go. But they had a huge Art Deco influence going back to their own building boom at the same time. So these are places that you could go to see some really cool Art Deco architecture. And there are a fair number of them that are in the United States on this list, but I think China would be probably high on my list. India, Mumbai would be high on my list. And Uruguay would be high on my list of places to stop.
And now, I restrained myself to Canada because of how much I found for us to talk about when I was thinking, where else can we travel in the world? But I will admit that I did not do the deep dive that I intended, since I just stuck with Canada. But India was a country that I really wanted to consider for our discussion, because I know that how rich the culture is and how far back just the history of the development of India goes. And I really wanted to kind of see how, if they were to travel there in the 1930s and try to get a glimpse of what magical culture as we know it would have been like in India, it seems like the kind of place where they would be able to get not only some beautiful shots of nature and of the architecture, but also just trying to incorporate respectfully the Indian culture into the Wizarding Worldscape.
I kind of agree with that, and I think it would definitely be on my list of places for them to go. But then again, what I like about this series is if they had done it right, and I mean, not to say that it's an absolute disaster, I still keep hoping they bring it back. I really think this could have just kept going, because even if you don't have Newt and the gang come back, you have the fact that we know that they have children and those characters could be developed. You could have just kept having more adventures with creatures and magic and seeing other places. Like, there was so much potential to this kind of spin-off series, in my opinion, of places to see and go. So I really feel like this could have just, and it could have introduced more characters that we saw and how they interacted with them. So I wouldn't mind a whole movie with Bunty, to be honest.
It could, but I think her. Just the end result of how a lot of people are feeling and reacting to some of what has come out of the Fantastic Beasts franchise, not even the controversies of people feeding into the franchise from outside of it. I think that maybe now they are terrified of doing anything that's too new and
I think so
something
too.
That we don't have a context for. And also, just purely looking at the numbers, there are some franchises that are having a great success with revamps, reimaginings, revisits, continuations, and there are some that are not. There are some that are very successful in that, and there are some who are failing right now. Well, and I think that when they weigh the different options of what can we put our resources into that is going to be in the middle of this Venn diagram of the fans are going to like it and it's going to generate revenue for us, I think they feel safer going back and redoing the series a little bit closer to the books than they do taking characters who are new and who have had their shot and not borne as much financial fruit as they want.
Mm-hmm. Oh, true. I just think it could have been. It's more of a what could it have been to me.
Out of all the countries that you named, apart from India, that I would like to see them go and visit, I want to see them go to New Zealand, just because I feel like for some people, it would be the most information about New Zealand that they get. Because some people still, they can't, I'll admit, I have difficulty spotting the difference between an Australian accent and a New Zealand accent. And I know that even within one of those two places, you would have not everybody having the exact same accent. But I do know that people often confuse people from New Zealand with people from Australia and the other way around. I'm sure that the cultures are each unique, and I think it would be worthwhile to give a little bit more exposure to the New Zealand culture.
I also like the idea of some of these places like South Africa, some places where we could see more wandless magic, more maybe native magic, and how that would tie in, because they do make it pretty clear, I think, in the deep dives of some of these, is that the wand is kind of a European thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not necessarily every, you know, wizarding community would use it. So it would be really cool to see how they explore the magic from a different culture's perspective, too, in my opinion.
Well, that was a great deep dive and also an answer to our main discussion topic. So it's cool the way you managed to combine both of those things in one.
Yeah, I've wanted to do this for a while anyway. I've wanted to kind of look at Art Deco, so from the perspective of the time frame we've been in. So it was kind of a good overlap.
Well, folks, you heard us talk about where we want to see Newt and the gang go around the world. Now we're throwing that question to you. Our podcast question is, where would you like to see Newt and the gang go? We'd love to hear your answer. We'd love to see what you're thinking. And you can drop us an owl on any of our social media outlets, or you can email us your answer at speakbeastie@gmail.com. We also would love it if you would leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. We love all of you as listeners and greatly appreciate any positive feedback that you have for us. Also, maybe a constructive criticism, question mark. But we'd love for you to leave those reviews on Apple Podcasts and help us find more listeners.
And in the meantime, we love keeping up with our listeners, and we love it when they keep up with us. So you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie. We are on Tumblr at SpeakBeastiePodcast.tumblr.com. And as always, you can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/SpeakBeastie, where you will have access to the episodes, you have cool stickers, and Patreon content that has been released, and there will definitely be more coming, because as my newest and now oldest tradition is that I am once again here to promise you that I am going to gather people to conclude the epic fan fiction, The New Adventures of Newt Scamander. We did that. See, and now I have to explain it every time I bring it up now, because I haven't been on for several episodes, but a long, long time ago, in the midst of the pandemic, when we were creating a fantastic amount of Patreon content, I got a bunch of the hosts together, and we read through several chapters of The New Adventures of Newt Scamander, which is a hilarious fan fiction written by someone calling themselves the Parody Master. And we did two parts where we got through, actually, no, I think we might have done three parts, and I don't recall anymore, but we got through what I thought was all of it, and then we reached a point where there were three more chapters, and I said, oh, we're not done. So now I have to finish it.
It does sound like a must do.
It does.
You know what? That's like my plug. Subscribe to our Patreon, and then wait in anticipation for me to finish The New Adventures of Newt Scamander. It's gonna be great. Trust me, Morty, the payoff is huge.
And subscribing gets you access to everything we've done before, too. So you'll get things like our coloring pages, and Liz made some cool wallpapers, and all the other hosts have done all different kinds of fun stuff. I think there's some D&D stuff on there for those fans. So we got lots of options on the Patreon.
We do. Just click on options, because there's a lot of them there.
I'm Jeff.
I'm Liz.
And I'm Carolyn. Case closed.